to use images in your social media. Most of us do. And some platforms like Pinterest and Instagram basically require it. So if you are using images, how are you using them? Do you have any concept? Do you have any strategy? Are there any tactics you're using behind that? Well, today's guest, Shawnee O, is going to help you with that. So saddle up. It's time for 8 Second Rule. This is 8 Second Rule, the podcast about attention-based marketing where we talk about getting, holding on to, and developing the attention of your ideal audience. You've got 8 seconds. What are you going to do with it? Hi, guys. I am Mark R. Morris, Jr., the bull rider of attention-based marketing and personal branding. I think I'm just going to switch it to the bull rider of personal branding, to be honest. And I probably need to rewrite my about section on LinkedIn just a little bit. If you don't know what this means, go on over to LinkedIn and check it out or listen to the earlier episodes. I'm not going to explain. I've got a nice interview to share with you today. I've spent a bunch of my life working in visual medium. Live theater is a very visual medium. I was a scenic designer as well as being a director and an actor and producer and all the rest of that. I also taught and produced short film and have been on the crew of several features and acted in a couple of them. So visual storytelling is something that I'm very familiar with, but not like Shawnee O is. And so that's why I brought her on, because I wanted her to talk to us about how you can use images in your social media and in your attention-based marketing efforts. So without further ado, here's Shawnee O. All right, guys, this is Mark R. Morris, Jr. here again for 8 Second Rule, and I am with Shawnee O, the Art Bard. She is a visual productions manager, and she can tell us what that means. Shawnee, what does that mean? What all do you do?
It basically means that I help people tell their stories visually. So that could be illustrations for books, picture books, interior illustrations, like comic books, graphic novels, or kidlit. And it's also pre-visualization work for films, animations, and game design. So character design, environmental design, storyboards. And apparently I'm getting into creative consultation, so that's exciting.
Oh, that's cool. All right. Well, congratulations on that. Yeah, I'm familiar with quite a bit of that stuff. I did theater for a living for 20 plus years and used to teach short film. So I have never attempted a comic book, although I did write some comic strips for the newspaper when I was a kid. So I've been kind of in and out of that, and I have a lot of friends who are in that world. So definitely something I'm familiar with. So I have you at a bit of a disadvantage on this show, though, because it's audio only. But I wanted you to talk to us about using visual elements in attention-based marketing, which is basically what my podcast is about, and just kind of grabbing attention with those and how, just some tips that people can use, especially if they're non-artists, like where to find good images or, you know, what makes a good image or whatever you want to say about that. And if you have something prepared, start with that first.
Sure thing. So we'll take from the general, right? We live in a visually stimulating world. That's where our attention spans are. You got to get people visually. If the image isn't there, then there's really few tools that you have to attract the attention of the passerby, right? You have to have good copy. You have to have that headline. But if you don't have that, your next best bet is to have the visual. So it's a tool that enhances your message to make sure that people see it. One of the easiest ways to get people interested is either to get them to identify themselves or to see a story. So I guess two of the easiest ways. So you can do a lot of storytelling within visual images. You can play with where the eyes go so that people are looking in the direction that you want them to look. So they see the picture and then maybe their eyes move down and they see the headline, right? So you're controlling eye movement. And then there's a lot of color theory that goes into it. So you can affect someone's mood. And if you want somebody to identify with your message, you might work more in the iconographic realm where you're looking at expressions, kind of how cartoons do it, right? Iconographic expressions like Mickey Mouse, just the two dot, the smiley face. The more broad you can make expressions, the more people can identify with a message or with a picture. So there's a lot of ways that you can approach getting people's attention, whether it's color theory or it's iconographic expression, or it's the way that they dart their eyes around the picture.
And guys, listen, what I'm always telling you on this show, guys, is if you hear her say anything and you don't quite understand it, guess what? We learn most of what we know from Google and books too. So you can go to the library or you can look it up on Google. It's not hard. I'm sure iconographic expression will get you tons of information. And I know that color psychology and color theory is definitely all over the place because it's used in sales and marketing all the time. So those are great tips. So tell me about your approach to social media, because you seem like you've got a pretty good following.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, I studied a lot of my social media marketing through Mike Shreve. He does the No Pants Project and Peaceful Profit Systems, and he has a lot of experience with advertising and copywriting and all that. So I really like the approach that he has, where you're being authentic with people and you're talking to people kind of one-on-one, right? The sales attitude doesn't work anymore. People have learned to tune it out, and people are online for connection. So I try my best to connect with people authentically, either through information or entertainment. That's where a lot of my copy comes from when I'm doing advertising or outreach. So I'm just trying to identify within the service arc that I have for potential clients, where are their problems gonna be, right? What are they gonna have issues with? What are their questions? And then I want to answer that question for them, right? Like what Mike Shreve says, if you wanna help people, go ahead and help them. You know, don't wait for them to pay you, just help them. Right. And so that's my approach with copywriting or marketing or outreach or any of that. And people notice that they can smell a resource a mile away. So it's really attractive.
That's absolutely that's something that I practice all the time on my channels, because you can always set boundaries as to how much you're willing to give away. And I highly suggest that you do, especially if you're the kind of person who your family or friends are always telling you you're doing too much for that person. So make sure that you decide, okay, what can your free offer be? Like for me, I'm going to close my LinkedIn, or it's just going to ding, ding, ding. Probably.
Sure,
okay. Let's see.
Yeah. You check that.
Close it.
All right. Yep. Okay. We're good.
Yep. So essentially I just offer, you know, a half hour of free coaching, and people are like, oh, well, that just leads into something else. I'm like, I never pitch my coaching services in that half hour. And if you get on the phone with me for a half an hour and I can't help you, then there's not going to be anything I can do for you further down the road. So it gives you a good perspective on, you know, what that person can provide to you. And I will also look at anybody's about section on their profile, and I won't do the rewrite for them, but I will definitely critique it and give them some tips. And so those are things that I offer for free. And I think if you're specific about that offering, it really helps too, because just in the last like probably 2 weeks, 5 or 6 different times, a free consultation turned into either a proposal for coaching or actual paid coaching. So it's amazing how that works. How about, tell me about getting into the design, creative consultation.
Creative consultation?
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me what that means and tell me how you're getting into it.
Sure thing. It seems like we're very similar in our approach there. You know, we have the one-on-one meeting, and if it's helpful to the person, it's helpful. And if it's not, oh, well, you know, 30 minutes, that's it. You had a pleasant conversation. So be it, right? And because of that approach where, you know, I'm really trying to empower the person to make whatever decision they need to make. I'm just here to give the information, right? And if they need more help, we can talk about that. Because I do that, and that's attractive to people, they'll follow up with, okay, well, I have this project or I have that project. How would you recommend I go about telling people about it? Or what do you think I should budget for it? Or what do you need from me for me to work with you, right? So if I'm finding that the more research that I'm doing, I'm establishing myself as an expert, but the not only novices or independent creatives are coming to me because I seem to know more, which I don't know if I know more. I'm just doing research, right? Anybody could Google. I don't have the experience, an incredible amount of experience than they do, right? But they're attracted to the whole, I have the information. And I'm trying to think about how I want to word this. It seems to be bringing in people who need a diverse amount of knowledge. You know, it's no longer I'm providing storyboards or I'm providing character design. It's I'm providing marketing help. I'm providing copy help. I'm telling them how they can advertise, how to get their shipping going, right? All these other things. And really interesting to see how creatives throughout the whole spectrum of novice to experienced, right? They just are so stuck in one lane. They're one creative lane. They're not branching out to learn how to turn this into a business. And I think that's a real shame, because in our culture, we talk about creatives like we just give them a pen and paper and say, good job, champ, keep doing that. But we don't prepare them for the business of it. And there's a whole business side.
And some of the most creative people I know, oh, we're echoing. Okay. Some of the best artists I know, you know, have had to either close up shop or take on, you know, day jobs because they suck at business. And I was even in that position when I was running my theater company. You know, it was really difficult to get your brain around the business side of it. Theater is a horrible business, though, honestly, because it's your packaging. You know, when you're doing music theater, you're packaging basically every art form that exists into one production, and you have one shot. So you get the people in the door. If they like it, they'll come back for the next one. But that's it. You know, it's the repeat customer is a very expensive buy, because I can't. It's not like getting a subscription for a comic book or writing a series of graphic novels where I know that I've got 200 people who are going to buy this one the first day it's out. You know, it's not necessarily like that. You can build up subscription where people are buying your tickets, but it's just the intensity of the work, because every single time it's a different thing. So that business is incredibly tricky, but art in general, I think, is hard, and it's hard for artists to put a price on their work. I liked what you were saying the other day. Talk to me about your pricing structure, because if there's any artists in the audience, I think that's fascinating that you got that down. That sounded good.
Absolutely. What you say about the theater business, right? Their problem is that they don't have an evergreen product. What yep. they do is once, and whoever buys it, that's it, right? And then the ship has sailed. So it's a very short window to make money, and it's one purchase per customer, if you're lucky, right? Maybe they come back, like you said. With art, artists think that the only way that they can make money is per commission, right? So what that means is that they're putting effort, a lot of effort, into one exercise. You know, let's just do this one commission and that gives me money, but then I have to work every time to get that money. So what any product provider needs is an evergreen product. With art, with writing, creatives have that intellectual property built in, right? Everything that we create is intellectual property, and you can lease those rights. You can put it on merchandise. You can lease the rights to a manufacturer if you want to see your design on a pillow, if you want to see your poem in Hallmark cards. That's evergreen profits. You're getting that money back, right? So when you're making a product like a book, you have your production costs, your overhead, your labor costs, all that. And then you have the marketing costs, and eventually your profits, if you're doing it right, if you're advertising right and you're reaching the right audience, your production costs will diminish and you'll be working more in revenue, right? That's one form, right? You have one product there. You have a book. You can do that for a lot of other things. You can have a lot of books. You can have a lot of posters. You can have a lot of different merchandise, right? So once you have more than one product, one is the dangerous number here. If you only have one thing, your ship is liable to sink, right? With more products, you can start using marketing strategies like bump buys, and you can start playing the psychology of marketing a little bit, so that one product, if somebody goes to your sales page and they see a book and it's $20, it probably took you $20 a book to even sell that. So you're covering expenses. But if you have a bump buy and you have two books or a package of five books, the package there of like four plus books, that's going to give you your revenue, right? So I want creatives to start thinking about what they have to offer as valuable, because it is. Look everywhere. Look at a billboard. Look at a movie. Look at a poster. There's a creative behind that. And then start turning that into merchandise. And then make a lot of merchandise so that you can cover your costs of production. It's a bit of lingo there, but...
It all made total sense to me. So I don't know about you, but I tend to get a little frustrated with the push behind STEM as far as education is concerned. And not because I don't think that science, technology, and math are important, But the problem is, at the root of every single one of those, when you have a user interface between those things and humans, who gets involved? People like you and me. We get involved. We write the stuff. We design the stuff. I mean, you can live in a, you can cut down a tree and you could build a house of it. You can dig a hole in the ground and put grass over the top of it. People lived in those for centuries. But if you want a beautiful home that you're proud of, that people come to you and go, wow, this is cool. I like where you live. You need an architect. Guess what? He's an artist.
That's right.
So is the craftsman who designed your woodwork, you know, who spent the time in the lab to make that paint color. All of those things are art. And sometimes we completely forget this. It's so underlying everything else that we do. And honestly, without art, I don't know if people would be that inspired to follow science sometimes. You know, even scientists and mathematicians are inspired by music or theater or beautiful paintings or design. So it all is, it's a big circle, because obviously we can't get art without the other things. You know, we wouldn't know what a good composition is if we didn't understand geometry and some mathematics, right? It would be impossible to really compose music without math. So there's lots of things that it's all intertwined. But yeah, I just find it fascinating that we tend to overlook art as a value. It really is true that artists, to a huge extent, unless they become very utilitarian and commercial, like graphic designers, which nothing against graphic designers. Some of them are absolutely brilliant artists, and many of them are in their spare time. You know, they have their projects on the side. But unless they become incredibly utilitarian and they fit themselves into whatever hole is available, a lot of times we don't see the value in it. So that it kind of makes me a little sad. But so tell me what, just before we finish up here, what you're working on right now. What's the project you're most excited about that you've got going?
Absolutely, absolutely. But to touch on what you just mentioned, right?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
STEM is a thing, but STEAM is starting to become
it's picking up,
popular,
isn't it? Yeah, and I love right? that. I love that.
I went to Evergreen here in Washington State, and there's a lot of controversy. You know, the further away you get from Evergreen College, the worse it sounds. But in my experience going there, it was a really empowering experience. And one of the approaches that are so appreciated about that school nationally, right, is that the classes are mixed, right? You go to other colleges and each class is compartmentalized. You have your math and your science and your blah, 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 right? But at Evergreen, here's a little plug, right? All of that is in the same class, right? You have multiple faculty for the same class, and they all have that experience and that expertise to give you a focused learning environment, right? I did agriculture and the business of agriculture and agroecology and science, and that was only possible through collaborating with different experts in the field, right? It couldn't have happened just one expert at a time. That switch from compartmentalizing to integration, I think that's the key here, right? The switch from STEM to STEAM. We're embodying the whole package there. Now, to move on to the next question, my big projects that I'm super excited about. I always have a bunch of my own personal projects going on in between client projects. My personal projects, I am aiming to have a fundraising Kickstarter crowdfunding campaign, if not by summer, then by winter for the holidays. I'm aiming to get 10,000 followers before I introduce that campaign, and it's for my graphic novel project. I've been working on this graphic novel series since I can remember. But only recently have I been able to really invest in it and put the time in it. And so I'm really excited to do that, but I keep getting distracted trying to find clients in between. So I don't really get as much time to work on the graphic novel series as I would like. So if I did the crowdfunding campaign, I think that I'll have more time to focus on that. So I really want to do at least book one by January 1st, 2023, right? I want to have that done. But if not, then I'm doing a panel at a time, and I'm posting that on LinkedIn and on my website, and eventually that's going to go into a pay-to-view platform like Patreon or Buy Me a Coffee. Between that, I have possible client work, storyboarding, character designs, and a new possible client is interested in getting like a Marvel universe basically started, a whole comic company. So that's a possibility.
That's ambitious.
Yeah.
Well, Shawnee, that's about all the time that we have. But yeah. I really appreciate you coming on. And if there was one piece of advice as far as using visual elements that you think is like the biggest key, how would you encourage people to do that?
I would say if you're not an expert in visual marketing, it is worth it to hire somebody who is. Then I would tell you to have whoever you hire, right, give you assets that you can use. So whether that's like a header that you can put onto your posts regularly, multiple headers, get that, get a collection of that. The number one seller for these images is a picture of a person. So whether that's you or somebody else, people are really interested in seeing other people. Don't do a flower, don't do a cool steak, don't do a picture of your dog, do a picture of you or some human. That's my recommendation.
Good advice. All right, yeah. Well, thanks, Shawnee. I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah.